Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Turned Into Punk Classics, a show where we take old episodes of Turned Into Punk that have been lost from the internet and return them to their previous glory by sticking them back on the feed. You can find this podcast on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and all other forms of social media. Well, that's pretty much it. At Turned Into Punk, you can find me on Twitter or Instagram at LeftForDamian. I play in a band. More information can be found at fuckedup.cc. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy another TOAP classic.
Favorite record?
Because that's one of the reasons why I'm here with you guys.
That's one of my sister played
that every day. I wanted to fucking punch your face in. Now, of course, and I'm not going to argue with you. I do realize the importance of that record and the greatness of that record, but it took me, I didn't want to listen to Neil Young. I wanted to listen to Uriah Heep. No. I wanted to listen to Black Sabbath. I wanted to listen to Ted Nugent. You motherfuckers, don't like this, you can turn around and get the fuck out.
Anybody wants to get metal, you can turn around and get the fuck out of here. All right now. You remember?
Trouble is, homie, joined Damn Yankee.
Yeah, joined like hunter people, camouflage gun bearer, camouflage gun bearing people.
Straight up bad music. The rock and roll time travel erases his accomplishments from the world of positivity because of rock and roll time travel.
You know, I almost bought that Amboy Dukes album today. We were shopping over here at the record store, Damien and I, and I picked out that Amboy Dukes album with Journey to the Center of Your Mind, which is an amazing song.
What was the album after Free For All? Was it Cat Scratch Fever?
I think so, yeah.
I mean, I'm cool up through and including Double Live Gonzo, and then after that, I'm so done with Ted Nugent. And then, of course I did. And then when he did all his weird Republican shit, then I was like extra special done.
You know, he's always been like that. He just like,
yeah, but he didn't have to rub it in our face.
He just kept it on the down low.
He knew how to market himself back then.
He didn't have to rub it in our fucking face.
Right.
So, I guess this is going to be the coolest episode of Turned Out of Punk ever, because this is just going to be...
This is really great so far.
This is awesome. This is amazing. What are you talking about? This is incredible. This is like every dream.
We're all super smart and stuff and really insightful, yeah.
Hey, look, I ran into the oldest Stern brother at the Starbucks in the Golden Nugget when we were at Las Vegas Punk Rock Bowling this last time, and he asked me how I was doing, and I looked at him and I was like really run down. I hadn't got my coffee yet, and he was all jazzed. He was psyched because he'd got his coffee. I'm feeling like I'm 61 years old. And we started to converse a little bit more.
I don't know.
And are then you 61?
I will be in a couple of months.
Oh, fuck. Why did I think... Dez is 57.
Why did you think... What did you think? Dez, I was 41 or 31?
59. I don't know. Hold on. You were...
So what
you
do you
used
think
to be
69?
You used to be 7 years older than me. So I'm...
I think he's still 7 years old.
Yeah. I'm just saying. When we were kids...
yeah, we were kids. I was older than you.
When we were kids...
Now he's 10 years older than you.
I feel like I was over 8 time, and you were like about to... You were in the middle of high school when I was 8.
Okay.
So you're 8 years older than me. Okay. I'm going to be 53 in a while, and you're going to be
61.
Perfect. Okay. I like it. Next question.
It adds up.
I didn't get to finish, but I'm having this conversation with the oldest of the Stern brothers, and he looked at me and he said, Keith, what else would you be doing?
Well, you had a good paralegal career on the way. You were going to be an attorney, right?
No, you're thinking of Lucky.
I'm not thinking of Lucky.
Your counterpart in the Circle Jerks.
He's no paralegal either. That guy's the actual real deal lawyer.
No, he's not.
Hey, he was.
No, he's not.
How could you be 50 and not pass the bar?
Lucky Lehrer?
How could you be 50 and not pass the bar?
Because the California State Bar Exam is one of the toughest.
Limbo lower. But
there's
now.
plenty fucking attorneys out there, and they're not 50.
So the way I do this podcast normally is I find out how people got into punk, and we just kind of go from there.
But we're not doing it like that this
time. No, we're not. Not at all. But I do want to talk.
We got to figure out how we're getting out of punk.
I do want to talk to Keith, though, about seeing the Stooges at the Whiskey. And was that like a pivotal moment?
No, you need to have Billy in on this conversation, because he's going to tell you that Metallic KO is the greatest live album ever recorded.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
More than Kick Out the Jams?
But even more than Intensities in Two Cities or Ten Cities or...
or fucking... What's the Mahavishnu
Frampton
one?
Frampton Comes Alive.
Frampton Comes Alive, yeah.
Like, Words you. Of Fire. More than that?
Birds of Fire, Mahavishnu Orchestra?
Yeah, no. No effects, Birds of Fire, Keith.
Crass Birds of Fire.
So, Bill, do you think Metal KO is the best live record of all time?
Oh, I do. I fucking do. How did you know that?
He just said it.
I just said it because he was asking me.
No, but it fucking is. Who? What? What's better than that? It's the best thing in the whole world.
How many times did we listen to that in a row over and over and over again?
Why do you think?
When we put the speakers out the window or put them on the roof, you know, to just fuck with the neighbors. The neighbors.
Why do you think when Greg Ginn said, we're going to cover Femme Fatale by the Velvet Underground, I said, I'm not singing that song. I'm singing Louie Louie.
Wait, so it could have been Femme Fatale?
It would have never been Femme Fatale. I was not going to sing that song. I'm not Greg Ginn's puppet. Chuck, are you Greg Ginn's puppet?
I most definitely am not, or was I ever.
That would change the history of music, though, I think, if Femme Fatale had been the set closer tonight.
Oh, it's a decent song.
It's a great song.
It's a great song. It's not partying.
It's not Louie Louie.
It's not partying at all.
No.
It's like an anti-party song. It's like, you know, like, I'm fucked up and bummed because, you know, my thing with the girls isn't working right.
That's one.
Yeah.
So
that's what that one's all about.
Do you remember the first time you met all these guys?
I met Billy at my dad's store. Billy would come in. You know, I've known Billy since he was 8 years old. Just like earlier when we were talking over breakfast, I've known Stephen McDonald since he was 11 years old. The McDonald brothers came into the Black Flag rehearsal space. And we told them, you can't continue to call your band the Tourists because that's too wimpy. There's nothing punk rock about that.
And the Tourists was a good name.
Well, that's the Eurythmics, pre-Eurythmics band. Then, Annie Lennox and Dave Stewart's band.
Then Chuck and Greg suggested that the McDonald brothers play our equipment to prove their punk rockedness or their manliness or how large their testicles were. And Steven, they're now like tall enough to be professional basketball players.
I think that means that you have really big dicks if you're tall.
No, it's
how do you know
it's your shoe size. That's how they measure a man's package by his shoe size.
I like the Greek kind. I like Greek yogurt.
Well, what about the other kind of yogurt?
I'm not a big fan.
But the Greek, they have economic problems. Do you think you can get those economic problems? Like,
are connected to the yogurt?
Are economic problems contagious from the yogurt?
I think it's the Saganaki, that flaming cheese.
Flaming
takes
cheese.
A lot of resources to light that cheese on fire every time.
Is that what it is?
That's what
like
I think.
Burning cheese?
Burning cheese. I grew up in the Greek neighborhood in Toronto, so I have a lot of experience with Greek food.
With burning cheese.
Burning cheese, definitely. So what about, Bill would come in your dad's store, and...
And at a certain point, Billy, I would be listening to the radio, And I would always, because my dad would listen to jazz. And whenever my dad wasn't around, KNAC. Yeah, KNAC.
Is that what was
Loud
first?
Rock.
Was it KNAC the first one?
Blue Oyster Cult, ZZ Top, David Bowie.
And Peter Frampton.
And Uriah Heep, Deep Purple. You know, all of that kind of stuff. You know, stuff that would bum our parents out. And Billy would hear something and go, Keith, who's that? And he would say, Billy, that's an album that you need to go out and purchase for yourself.
Do you remember those records? Do you remember those moments?
The question is, did you take the advice, Bill?
Yeah. Did you take the advice?
Oh, totally. There were, like, pivotal moments that changed, you know, who I am as a person that were basically albums that Keith told me I should go buy. Yeah, absolutely.
What about, so like all that stuff, kind of, you know, there's like a lot of glamier stuff there. What about Zolar X? Did you ever go and see Zolar X?
Oh, God. Holy, holy cats, did I see Zolar X. What do you want to know about him?
Were you into him?
You need to introduce yourself, Dez.
I'm Dez.
Hi, Dez.
Good job, Dez.
You did a great job tonight. You killed it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Zolar X, yeah. Oh, God, what was that? What was that record? What was that? Help me, Keith.
Did they have a record?
They had a 12-inch.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it was posthumous, like, though, right?
No.
Energize Me? Is that on it?
Yeah.
What planet were they from?
Zolar.
X.
I think they just called, they were from planet Zolar Z, but they heard about X, so they called themselves Zolar. I mean, whatever. That's bad.
It was good, bad, though.
They got back together
It was kind of like, okay, this is fucked up, but like, I'm kind of liking this just because of that reason. You know, it's like B movies. It was like B movies.
Do you remember the first time you met Dez?
Well, we were all party meisters. We were all looking for the keg and the 12-pack. And there's actually a great photo of Dez, Brian Grillo. Carrie Ella Black. I want to say Mary Rat. And myself, just like hanging out on a couch. And it looked like it could have been in that front room at the church.
In the pool table room?
In the pool table room. Before the pool table.
Right.
Or after the pool table.
I think it's probably before.
Hey, remember the night that we were all like hanging out?
What room? Wait, what? Which room?
The southeast room.
Southeast room. It would have been facing the Altadena Dairy.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. All right.
You know, right there when you go in the front door. Yeah. You would.
Like where Greg ended up living there after. Yeah.
He lived across the way.
No, that was after. I mean before that.
Shh. I mean, he got sick.
Don't tell the guys.
And, like, had food poisoning in there. I didn't really live in there.
I remember it was either Janet Housden or Michelle Galassi or Mars. Remember Mars and Randy?
And they were, like, my best friends at Maricosta when I was a freshman.
Yeah. Mars and Randy. Or
Mars went out with Joan. Dave Nolte.
But he went out, but you know, Mars went out with Joe Nolte first. And then Joe Nolte dumped her, and then Dave Nolte started going out
with her. Wait, from
the last? Yeah. What other Joe Nolte?
No way. I didn't know.
That's why I wasn't putting
it. I think there's an actor, actually. But so, anyway.
Nick
so,
Nolte's brother.
So it was either Janet or Michelle or Mars, and they were like, this is Ron and Dez. It wasn't Ron. It was Ron and Dez. Like, Ron and Dez were together. It was always like Ron and Dez.
Yeah, like
Lenny and Squiggy, but not Lenny and Squiggy, but it was always like for me, Ron and Dez, it was like
You mean like Abbott and Costello?
No, I don't mean like that. I mean Ron and Dez.
Ron and Dez.
Yeah.
What about Martin and Lewis?
No, Ron and Dez is way cooler than Martin and Lewis. Come on, Ron and Dez.
What about Ren and Stimpy?
Right, all there right. you go.
All right. Beavis and Butthead?
Laurel and Hardy?
Yeah, actually, we're kind of like that because one guy, you know, it's.
Jerry and OB?
That's above everybody that's listening to.
Yeah, I was like, you guys lost me on that one.
No, Jerry is my dad.
If he does the OB thing, OB,
hey Billy, you know OB's history? He was Black Ops. He was one of the first guys sent into Vietnam to scope it out and say, this is what we need to do. This is where we need to go. These are the people we need to fuck with.
When OB came back, though, he thought he was God. He told me that he was God.
Well, also,
maybe he knew something you didn't know.
There were five of them that were sent in. Five of these Black Ops. These are the first guys to go. The first guys to go into Vietnam that represented the United States.
God.
Yeah, and the final order, their final order was that they were, none of them were supposed to come back from Vietnam. They were all supposed to kill each other.
Wow. So in the
beginning. And he came back, and he was completely out of his mind. He lived downtown L.A., and he would wrap, every night before he went to bed, he would wrap himself from head to toe in foil, because he thought that there were, like, Secret Service agents on all of the rooftops around the hotel where he lived, shooting him with these cancerous rays. The guy was out of his mind. And he could be a real sweetheart and then just snap in a second.
How'd you guys know this guy?
The thing about being out of your mind... And
that's a good question. Jerry let him stay there. What was the arrangement?
No.
He was God and they had to obey?
No, he would ride the bus from downtown L.A., fish on the pier, and then he would sit in the store all day. He was out of his mind. He was living downtown.
Wait, but I remember somebody up in the rafters.
Oh, that was Raymond. Ray.
Not Ray, not like the pier Ray.
Yeah.
The pier Ray lived in the upstairs?
Yeah.
You mean the church he lived in?
OB up there.
No.
Yeah.
No, OB was never up there.
Because he was too big to get up there, probably.
It was Ray. You know, without the guy with all, missing all of his teeth. The guy that would eat steak. Like, yeah, he would just, he'd gum that steak.
Gum that steak down, yeah.
That was his album.
What you're doing is you're getting a history of my dad's store.
No, well, you're getting the, like, the pre-history of pre-South Bay, pre-punk, pre-that. Like,
so what were there bands? Like, were you guys into local bands? Were there any local bands?
All of the local bands, besides The Last, were all cover bands. They were all top 40 bands. And the reason why we gravitated towards the Alley Cats, who were in Lameda, who we also kind of consider to be a local band.
Oh, yeah.
And The Last was because they were the only bands with any creativity. Like, they were the bands that stood up and said, this is what we do, and if you don't like it, that's the way that it is, so be it.
Was Rhino 39 from Long Beach?
Long Beach. Yes.
I somehow always harbored a kinship with them, because, I don't know, I just felt like they were one of us somehow.
Their drummer almost became our drummer.
Wouldn't Long Beach be...
Yeah.
Couldn't... Yeah, it wasn't good enough. Couldn't we consider...
He wasn't good enough.
Yeah, I liked his playing. And
everybody's doing the Perlixen stuff. Boom, bump, bam, dun, dum, 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 dum.
No compromise, no compromise.
No compromise, no compromise. No compromise, no compromise. No compromise, no compromise. Yeah, yeah.
What about the Quetch, though?
Rhino 39. And the
Faceless Girl came up to me. Is there his personality? Wonder what she want to be. What? What is that?
The reason we had a kinship... with Rhino 39 was because we could consider Long Beach to be the most southern tip of the South Bay.
Before you go to
the
like
northern tip of Orange like County. Orange County.
Yeah,
Orange County. You know, six of one, half a dozen of the other. Apples
yeah, I think
or oranges.
Orange County goes all the way to Marina del Rey, but that's a Venice outlook.
Orange County goes all the way to Marina yeah. del Rey.
So was there like a divide though between like you know like Rhino 39 is definitely also more of an aggressive band. Like
did you wait, more whoa.
Not Northern Black Flag, I mean, but I mean
no,
like
no,
like
because they had clean guitars. They sounded like
but
cross
it's fast.
Between like the Minutemen and the Descendants.
It's not like the Quick though, or not the Nerves or
oh,
like those.
Okay, that's different. Oh, the Quick. I bought my first drum set. It said the Quick on the bass drum. So I guess it was the Quicks.
You bought it from Danny Bonnier?
I don't know who I bought it from. I bought it, you know, the Recycler. Dude, remember the Recycler?
Danny Bonnier told one of the greatest stories I'd ever heard about how his older brother, who was like 18 years old, dragged him to see the Rolling Stones at Altamont.
Whoa.
He was 5 years old. His brother said, I can't find a babysitter. You're just coming along with me. Get in the car. And they drove up to Altamont and somehow managed to get past all the people. The two of them walked in the back gate. Just walked in, and there they are on the side of the stage when the Rolling Stones are playing.
What year?
That's like 1969.
69, yeah.
That was the end of this. That's
okay all across the USA.
That signaled the end of the Summer of Love. The Rolling Stones said, "Sympathy for the Devil. Fuck your peace and love."
Well, I guess, and Manson too, right? That was the same, same moment. So, were you into the Nerves and the Quick and stuff? Was that like part of it, or no?
Well, we listened to all of that stuff. Rodney played it on his show.
Yeah,
you know, and we listened to Rodney religiously.
I would hold my, you know, the court stenographers have those rectangular little tape decks and they have like five big buttons on them that look like piano keys, like junior piano keys, and I would hold my cassette tape up to the speaker the whole Rodney show and tape the whole Rodney show, and then that was like my
soundtrack
until the next week, until Rodney went again, and we would bring them, everybody did it, you know, so Mars and Michelle and Janet and Frank and Dave, everybody had their one of those tape decks, and we'd bring it and we'd go sit out by the bleachers in this little part where there weren't any football players, and then we'd listen to the Rodney, you know, all the stuff he played, you know, he always played that Flyboys thing.
And the Runaways.
Oh yeah,
he loved the Runaways
and the Beach Boys. That's when he did his Phil Spector Beach Boys tributes. But Rodney played all that stuff before even the station that he worked for played it. They just kind of worked it into their rotation because they realized that Rodney would get a lot of tune-ins. You know, so many people were going, wow, what's this fucking
even though it was late, because I was in high school, I had to get up. But I would stay up, you know, to listen to it, yeah.
Like, didn't he come on at 10?
No, midnight.
On Sunday.
No, Matt,
no. He went from 10 to, like, he had 4 hours or 3 hours.
It seemed long to me. I mean, I had to, like, stay up. I had to, like, drink coffee, like, stay up for it.
It's well fucked.
But I guess, as a fisherman. Yeah.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. it's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
We also, like, didn't he write lyrics for, what was that band that he did? A split 7-inch on Bomp with the Venus and the Razor Blades, and it's Rodney and the Brunettes, I think.
Venus and the Razor Blades, that's not the little girl from the Stingers. No.
That was,
oh, I don't know.
That was like
Unit 3 with Venus. That was Unit 3 with Venus.
That was her parents.
Oh, I like boys.
Three. Yeah.
I like boys. Never mind.
Yeah.
Never mind.
That was the little girl that played with her parents.
Yeah, her name was Venus, and she was, yeah, they were when she was like
they,
nine.
They were exploiting their child. How dare them?
I did that.
I don't think they were. They had just a punk rock household. I mean, that was just, if you went to those parties they had, it was just that's just how they were.
She was born in what?
Yeah, the Stingers.
Yeah, I always wanted to hear that band.
You never heard the Stingers?
No.
We had their practice room after Cabrillo, maybe?
Uh-huh.
When Cabrillo got
CD6 almost played a game
blown out by the Pigs, then I think we started practicing at the Stingers' place.
They have records.
That Stingers? Was like a family band. That was cool.
I can't see why you are so blind. Oh, that was a great hook, right? I can't see why you
they
are so blind.
They were sort of popular. People went to their shows and stuff, but they had a house down there on 7th Street or someplace.
Yeah.
And people, like, they were a big party scene.
Yeah, it was good. I liked it.
Well, we're talking about rock bands here, or it doesn't matter, American bands.
Normally, like, the way the show works is I start always the exact same way, which is ask the person how they got into punk and just go. But I thought, you know, we'll just have fun.
Talking about music.
This show's different, though.
This show's very different. Today's very different.
I have a question.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hands up, who likes the band The Saints?
Oh, absolutely.
I'm stranded.
On my own?
Know your product.
Yep, lipstick on your collar. They do the Connie Francis.
So now, why did you bring up the Saints?
Because they're one of my favorite bands, and I don't know if we're sticking to America or
anywhere.
Australia.
But when did you guys hear the Saints? Because they kind of like, obviously they predate the Sex Pistols with that release.
I heard them when Dave Nolte he would make me a cassette, and he's like, "Here's all the stuff that you have to listen to, because you're listening to Kiss and you're listening to Aerosmith. Here's the stuff you have to listen to." And so Dave Nolte made me a cassette, and it had the Saints, and it had Slaughter and the Dogs, and it had Blue Cheer, and it had all this stuff on it. You know?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So that was kind of was that
turned me on to what was Elvis Costello. Everything is less than zero. Dun 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 dun. I like that song.
Good.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
I think Elvis Costello should do it with the Cookie Monster vocal, burp vocal now.
That was burp. That wasn't a
cookie. It worked for both, though.
The thing is, the Cookie Monster is the vocalist in every death metal band.
He is a very well seasoned.
That wasn't me.
No. But
you could get down there.
Yeah, but I think that would really fuck me up in the head.
How come the Welsh don't get their own liquor? There's Irish whiskey, there's Scotch whiskey, then the British have, the English have gin. So what about the Welsh?
The English don't have gin.
Sure they do.
No, they don't.
That's their shit.
Gin came from the juniper plant, which is Geneva, and that was invented in Belgium.
The British make gin, come on, like Tanqueray.
Third cousin makes gin, but that's not what you said.
It's famous. It's a British drink, come on.
I'm sure there's a Welsh one.
Is it
whiskey or something?
Well,
that's what I'm wondering about.
We're all experts here. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what a juniper thing was.
Who gives a shit about that? That grows everywhere. That grows in Southern California.
Was actually, I think the British. But we should research. Google it.
Yeah,
I don't have Wi-Fi.
But who here has had juniper?
Geneva.
Geneva.
But it's kind of like the hamburger, right? Like, it was invented in Germany, but it's perfected in America.
Germany was freaked out. in the United States, they took the breading and shit out and made it a hamburger.
They made it awesome. Perfected it.
Is this going to be like the real Black Flag book? You know, not the Henry books.
He doesn't have rights.
It just goes up as a conversation.
Well, you can call it whatever you want. Call it a conversation, but like, it's kind of a history. I mean, you're getting Keith's perspective, and then I'm younger than them, meaning Keith and Chuck here, and Greg, and Robo, especially Robo.
But not Isaac.
You know, but not Isaac. I mean, Isaac's in the room.
Isaac's the kid. I'm older.
It's like you're getting a little bit of what's not written in books.
Yeah, and that's the stuff that I think everyone that listens to the show, and that's the stuff I care about. You know, like I want to hear about the stuff that you can't find out about easily now.
I don't know if I would like to see a book, but I know it right here. See, I've lived it. And it was me and Ron, like Bill said. You know, we showed up. We heard this band Panic was practicing at a church. But they're maybe going to change it. Ron told me this. Maybe going to change their name to Black Flag. And then we had seen Robo up on...
No, I'm getting them cold.
Aviation.
They're not cold.
With his Cortina, putting something, he goes, "That's the drummer," and that's when you guys used to play up on Aviation.
What do you mean? Cocaine into his trunk?
Perhaps, but you weren't supposed to say that.
But that's okay. You know, he's not here to defend himself. We can say whatever we want.
And he lives. And he, yeah, I know. But he lives in Columbia anyway. So go ahead.
And don't blame the beer.
Yeah, but at the time he was living in El Segundo, and you know how he got into the country.
Because he was a student.
Yeah, he was a
exchange student.
He was supposed to be going to UCLA.
Was he really? Not like Harvard College or something?
El Camino. El Segundo Junior High.
We went to the University of Punk Rock instead. So
he graduated from that one.
Yeah, he graduated.
Well, if I can't even do his voice, I'm trying to do Marky Ramone.
You know who can
don't make fun of Robo because he's a good guy. And, you know, do I have to kick the little guy's ass? This is a real.
You know, his finest moments playing drums as a member of Dust, Marky Ramone.
Yeah, those
Marky Bell. Marky Bell, who was also a member of the Voidoids. Yeah, but some of the people that are listening to this might not know.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We've talked about Dust on the show before.
Yeah, we're trying to enlighten a few people.
I guess also I want to find out, what did you guys see the Screamers? Were you into the Screamers? Was that?
I saw the Screamers on several occasions. Tomato was actually my neighbor when I lived over by the Hollywood Bowl. And we became really good friends. Really a sweetheart. One of the coolest guys that you would ever meet. And those guys, there would be no 9-inch Nails. There would be no... You should ask these two guys what they think of the Screamers. Billy and...
Were you guys...
Steak-ums.
Were you guys into the Screamers?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's always like a distinction that's made in like the history books now about when the beach scene came and ruined, quote unquote ruined, not me saying this, the LA punk scene. And was that real, or is that like a myth?
HC
that's
too.
What I mean. That's what I mean. Like, but like that's what it's.
That was a different county, and it was a different. It's like what Keith says every night about white minority. It was done as a joke, and then certain people took it seriously. And it's like those certain people, not everybody, but a lot of people from Orange County did.
And the Valley.
And the Valley. And the Valley where neighborhoods where their parents were conservative and they just wanted to rebel in any way, and some of them really wanted to fuck shit up. And I mean, because I have a story about my first gig. And we had like a mailing list of about 500 people, about 300 of them were from Orange County. So we planned this thing at the church. First of all, I had been in the band like 4 days. You know, I came up to the church every day. I actually think I lived there for one day before we went on tour. But I see Chuck. And Chuck, what was that car that you used to have when you asked me when to be in the band?
Oh, the 62 Impala.
62 Impala.
That was a nice car.
It's like noon. And he opens up the trunk and it's like 2 cases of Burgundy. Warm.
Brew 102, man.
Or Brew 102, or one of those.
Cheaper than Burgundy.
California beers. And he goes, here, you want a beer? Hey, Dennis, come over here. You want a beer? And I go, yes. Oh, yeah, Chuck, sure. Oh, and then he opens up the trunk, and I go, it's in your trunk. I'm thinking this. I don't know if I said it out loud. He gives me a beer. I go, yeah, well, people in Europe drink their beer warm, so we're going to have a beer with Chuck, you know?
Wait, are we talking about the Cortina yet?
No, this is after. This is on me joining the band.
With the fringe around the edge.
I feel like from the Impala leads to the Cortina.
I had, did you never know, remember, like, I had fringe all around the cabin area?
Yeah, it's like a cholo mobile, but in Chuck style.
Right, like,
so
tackier.
He goes, hey, Des, come over here. And I go, hey, what's going on, Chuck? And he goes, well, I want to talk to you about something here. You want a beer? And he opens up the trunk and gives me a beer. And we're sitting there talking. And he goes, how would you like to try to sing for the group? And I use a 50s term. I don't know why. But I go, what do you mean? Sing. I play guitar. You know, and he goes, well, yeah, but you're just, we know you. You're our friend, and you're a cool guy, and, you know, whatever. And
Probably sounds like what I would say.
Yeah, and I go, what? How do you know I can do it? He goes, because at every gig, when Keith was the singer, and I didn't go to too many Ron gigs, too. It was just a weird scene between me and him. It was like, I didn't really care. I think Ron felt I didn't support him. But I missed him.
Yeah. So that was your black flag.
Yeah. And I wasn't jealous about the fact that he was in Black Flag. That wasn't my goal. I was surprised when Chuck asked me, you know. But anyway, I go in there, and he goes, well, you know all the words. You sing all the words to win. Even with you.
No, you knew the lyrics better than I did.
That's all you gotta say. He's right.
Played live.
He's right. That's all you gotta say.
He probably sat out in the hall with Ron and drank beer while we were rehearsing.
For sure he did. But at the shows, there he was singing the songs in front of us. I knew you knew the words.
You know what? Yeah. I mean, And it was everybody in the band. I don't care what the attitudes were, or who, how not drunk or how drunk somebody else was. That was my picture. So
we were like the Dodgers. We had a really great farm system.
Well, that's true. That's true, because David Bowie went to one of your gigs.
Did he really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He saw Keith.
That was the Hong Kong Cafe where there was... this was the gig where everybody in Hollywood said they were there because David Bowie was there.
Yeah, of course. I didn't believe he was really there. Was he really there?
He sat at the... He was sitting... At the very end of the... You know how they had the tables running by the stage? And he was sitting at the very end of one of the tables with two big black soul brothers who you weren't even going to walk up to and say, "Hey, man, how's it going?"
With bodyguards, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and the rumor that I heard why he was there was apparently he had the night off and just wanted to go to Chinatown and hang out in Chinatown. Right. And he apparently heard that there were a handful of bands playing at the Hong Kong Cafe. It doesn't get any more Chinatown than the Hong Kong Cafe.
Yeah.
Except for Madame Wong's.
Exactly. Well, yeah. Which was right across, which was right across the
100 feet away.
100 feet away.
But then there was like kind of like not beef between the two venues, but there was like a bit of a rivalry, right? Like you couldn't play one or the other at the point.
One was new wave.
Yeah.
And a little bit of punk rock, but the other one was like the Germs played, X played,
Black Flag played,
the Control, you know. I don't know if Black Randy played there.
You never know.
He probably might have.
I feel like I would have gone if he went, if he played.
Yeah, that's true. Because he was out of his mind. You had to go see him play. He was out of his friggin' mind.
Well, I guess also, what about Vox Pop? Was you ever into...
Cab Driver. Great song.
Killer song.
Paul Cutler is an amazing guitar player and... It is amazing guitar player, and if he hears this, that's I'm saying he is. So,
he is an amazing guitar player.
Yeah,
was that like
the jams with him? It was really fun.
But that was 45. Wasn't that 45 Grays?
Silver no, Child.
That was Vox Pop.
Yeah, but, Vox Pop. Well, same people.
No, it's Don.
It was like swished around.
Yeah, yeah, well, yeah, they all play different instruments and shit.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
it was Don Bowles and him and who played guitar and that shit.
Oh, Jeff Dahl?
Maybe.
Was it Jeff Dahl that played on Cab Driver, Keith?
I don't know. I'm not that familiar with Vox Pop.
I watched them record it.
Really?
The bass... played through a giant, like, actual theater speaker system. He had, like, it was like a speaker and a big horn that was about 6 feet long and about 5 feet wide square.
Wow.
And it's like just one speaker.
It was Vox Pop was kind of like everybody in 45 Grave switching instruments except for Mary and being... Also, besides Cab Driver, which is kind of a rockin'...
Yeah.
Cab Driver, I'm a dude, cab... Everything else is kind of, like, really spaced out, Velvet Underground.
It's Just Like Your Mom.
Well, Just Like Your Mom is...
That's kind of aggressive.
Well, that was the B-side.
Yeah,
right?
That's a flip.
Yeah.
But Jeff Dahl was also in Power Trip, right? That was his band?
Yes.
Jeff Dahl's Power Trip.
Oh, Jesus.
One of the first bands on Mystic Records.
He was also a member of the Angry Samoans.
Yeah. Also, Angry Samoans have a connection to Blue Oyster Cult, right?
They at least liked Blue Oyster Cult.
No, didn't Richard, what's his name from Vaughn?
Richard Meltzer was in Vaughn.
Yeah, and he wrote lyrics for
Blue Oyster Cult.
That's right. Did you ever see Vaughn?
I'm in love with your mom.
Yeah. Electrocute my cock?
Yeah, I might have seen mom.
I saw them at the Whiskey A Go-Go and they were terrible. They were a joke, man.
Yeah.
I suppose they lived up to their name, huh? That's in short for vomit.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Was there a place called... No, the Wild Goose was a strip
they
club.
They thought that they were going to be the West Coast version of the Dictators.
What was that club by the airport?
The Jet Strip?
No.
The...
Eagle? No.
Is it the place, the one where the, like, Van Halen played and shit?
Yeah. That Wolfgang.
It's still there, too. It's the, what is it called?
Not the Wild Goose. That's a strip club.
No, that's a strip club. This place was a hall.
Yeah, it was. It was kind of like big.
They
like
did kegger
Alpine,
parties there.
Like Alpine Village.
Around my back.
Kegger parties. I'm going to go to bed.
Yeah, I think that's good for tonight. I think that was awesome. I think we're never going to find out where Vox Pop and Vom may or may not have played.
Or whether there really is Welsh whiskey.
Or whether there is Welsh whiskey. Those will be answered in part two. But this has been awesome. Thank you guys for letting me do this. I really appreciate it.
Senor.